Well, good evening, everyone. Good to see you here. Half term week, so some of our regulars are away with their kids, I guess. We're doing a series, occasional series, in the gaps between doing the Bible right the way through on the fruit of the Spirit. Who's been here for an earlier one or more in the series? One or two of you? Yeah. Don't worry, I'm not going to ask you difficult questions about what the talk was about. So we're on session 8. So we've done 7. The fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, and self-control. So we have to wait for self-control because that's going to be the next one. Today, it's gentleness. One thing I noticed when I was looking around for material for tonight's sermon, normally what you do, or I do, is you start off reading the passage and thinking about it and praying about it. And it's funny how many times things kind of crop up in the bit leading up to the sermon that are relevant, that you kind of make note of and jot down. But then also tend to look at commentaries. But if you get a commentary for Galatians, this is 2 verses. And this is one of the 9 facets of fruit that's listed. So your average commentary doesn't really make much sense for looking at gentleness. It just kind of goes over. And the fruit of the Spirit, and there's a bit about it, and that's it. So which is an interesting challenge. I also found that in our collection of books, we'd got a lot more books about the gifts of the Spirit. And I was reflecting on that and thinking that maybe that's because the gifts are seen as being much more exciting, whereas fruit is a bit sort of slower moving and a bit, well, it's hard work as well, whereas the gifts are kind of, you know, zzz, exciting. And we're looking at gentleness. So first off, what's the word really mean? Words are tricky things, or they can be quite tricky things. I remember a few years back, I was at a conference in Albuquerque, and I was having a lunch. It was a kind of buffet lunch provided, and we'd had the main course, and my American friend and I were kind of looking over to see what was still on the table, and I said, "I wonder what's for pudding?" And he gave me a slightly odd look and said, "Why do you think they're going to do pudding?" I said, "Well, you know, second course, you know, we've just had the main course. I want something for pudding." And after a bit of back and forth, it turned out that from where he was from in America, pudding was a very restrictive word, and it meant basically a kind of custard or a blancmange, a milk pudding. And for me, pudding meant the sweet thing that happens after the savoury. So whether it was going to be fruit or ice cream or, I mean, loads of things come under the category of pudding, almost all of which I like. And it took a little while because, of course, what he was saying I misinterpreted and what I said he misinterpreted. And this is English and American, which aren't that different languages. So what I did with this one was I looked into what other translations make of the fruit of the Spirit. Different people have translated the Greek in different ways and trying to find what's the best word, the best way of putting it. And I discovered that some of them had humility and some had meekness. I also had a look at what the dictionary gives as the word's meanings. And I also had a look to see where else in the New Testament is the same Greek word used. And how are people translating it there? And what kind of context is it in? And then there's a similar word to the word translated gentleness, which also appears 4 or 5 times. So we've got older translations often use the word meekness. And as I said, some prefer humility. And the words in the Greek dictionary with all 3 meanings. So it's kind of quite a broad word, I think. And I was amused when I looked at other places in the New Testament where it appears, because quite often this word appears in a sentence with a word that means humility, And if that's the case, they tend to translate it gentleness, or with a word that means gentleness, and then they translate this word as humility, because it's the one that's got a broader meaning. And saying humility and humility, you just don't do that in English. You'd be repeating yourself. So, for example, in 2 Corinthians 10, Paul says, "By the humility and gentleness of Christ, I appeal to you." And here, I could ask you to guess which is the one that's the word in our passage. It's the first one. Conversely, in Ephesians chapter 4, verse 2, where the NIV reads, "Be completely humble and gentle, be patient." In that one, the word in today's passage is the gentle word, and a Greek word used that only means humility. Who'd be a translator? Tough job, isn't it?
Used to be, yeah.
Yeah, it's a real challenge trying to work out how to put something across and make the words as meaningful as they can be to the people reading. So, we've got something in the space of gentleness, meekness, humility. So what's it look like? Well, the fruit of the Spirit we see shown in the life of Jesus, and we see it shown in the life of the early church. And some of the scenes there tie in to this meaning. And also, tying into our morning series, when we're looking at Isaiah, there's this great verse in Isaiah 42, verse 3. "A bruised reed he will not break, and a smouldering wick he will not snuff out." And the idea of being gentle so that things that are damaged or broken get supported and healed rather than crack completely. And I think that's a great image I really like about what gentleness means. And we see Jesus being meek in difficult places. Think about when he's brought before the high priest and various false accusations are made by various kind of scoundrels who are pulled forward and made to accuse him. And the idea being, if they can get two people whose story agrees enough, that's enough for the death penalty. And Jesus does not answer the accusations. He says nothing. He only gives an answer when the high priest says to him, "I charge you under oath by the living God, tell us if you are the Messiah, the Son of God." And at that point, he says, "It is as you say." And then there's examples of being gentle in the life of the New Testament. So I've got a passage that Eleanor's going to come and read. I found a Bible study book called The Fruit of the Spirit. And guess how many sections it's got? 9, yep. And what the person who wrote the Life Builder Guide said is, there's very little really to go on the passage. It makes much more sense to pick another couple of passages that show you the word in action and go through it. And the passage he picked seemed such a good one, I thought I'd have the same one. So it's in 1 Thessalonians, and Eleanor will come and read it to us now.
If you want to look in the church Bibles, it's page 1186. 1 Thessalonians chapter 2, and I'm reading verses 1 to 12. "You know, brothers, that our visit to you was not a failure. We had previously suffered and been insulted in Philippi, as you know. But with the help of our God, we dared to tell you his gospel, in spite of strong opposition. For the appeal we make does not spring from error or impure motives, nor are we trying to trick you. On the contrary, we speak as men approved by God to be entrusted with the gospel. We are not trying to please men, but God, who tests our hearts. You know we never used flattery, nor did we put on a mask to cover up greed. God is our witness. We were not looking for praise from men, not from you or anyone else. As apostles of Christ, we could have been a burden to you, but we were gentle among you, like a mother caring for her little children. We loved you so much that we were delighted to share with you not only the gospel of God, but our lives as well, because you had become so dear to us. Surely you remember, brothers, our toil and hardship. We worked night and day in order not to be a burden to anyone while we preached the gospel of God to you. You are witnesses, and so is God, of how holy, righteous, and blameless we were among you who believed. For you know that we dealt with each of you as a father deals with his own children, encouraging, comforting, and urging you to live lives worthy of God, who calls you into his kingdom and glory.
Thank you. So it does seem a nice example to look at. First up, it's not the same as weakness. Paul writes in this, we dared to tell you his gospel in the face of strong opposition. So whatever it means, it doesn't mean saying nothing. And as we know from what happened to Paul in some of his missionary journeys, some of the places he went to and some of the punishments he received, he got into trouble. It's not a matter of just sort of trying to be inconspicuous. There's something more than that. So they were courageous, but they weren't imperious. He says in verse 6, even though as apostles of Christ, we could have asserted our authority, but they chose not to stand on that, but to be like young children among them. One of my favourite stories about Bishop Maurice Wood, who was around when I was a student, so that was a while back, was there was some civic ceremony where he was, gave the preach and stuff. And then at the end of the service, all these dignitaries wanted to speak to the bishop, and they couldn't find him. He disappeared. Eventually, they tracked him down. He'd noticed that the people in the washing up in the kitchen were overwhelmed and had gone and helped. I thought, that's somebody who's got it. He wasn't standing on his dignity. He was prepared to go and help wherever it was needed. And then Paul goes on in verses 7 to 12, and you can see his real concern, his deep concern for the people he's with. Just like a nursing mother caring for her children, we cared for you. That's a pretty strong image of gentleness. And Paul doesn't appear to be remotely concerned that people might think this is a feminine example. And then in verse 11, he says, we dealt with each of you as a father deals with his own children. And again, that element of concern and wanting the best for them and that relationship. And then he talks about what happens. They did this so that they could be encouraging, comforting, and urging them to live lives worthy of God. So the end result they wanted was for the best possible outcome for the people that they were among. And by encouraging and comforting them and urging them to live lives worthy, they were going to be doing the best they could to bring them on in their knowledge and love of God. John Stott once described this word as a balance between excessive anger and complete absence of anger, which I also quite like. So you've got this urging. It's not just being nice, but there is a sense of challenge and urging, but in a gentle way, a way that doesn't put people's backs up. Another thing that can be helpful with words is to look at the things they're not. We had someone I knew some years back who had worked for a while in a newspaper, and her thing was always, you take the statement and you put a not in it and see whether it would be newsworthy. And that kind of tells you whether you're saying anything important or not. So what's the opposite of some of these fruit of the Spirit? Well, some of them are easy. Love, you can have hatred, or despisal. Joy, the opposite, is things like misery or regret. Peace, opposite of peace, would be war or perhaps anguish. They're all pretty negative characteristics. I don't think anyone would really be that much in favour of those. Patience, kindness, and faithfulness all have very straightforward opposites. Impatience, unkindness, and unfaithfulness, just the opposite. And again, none of those are words that get a great deal of positive vibe about them, shall we say. And goodness is opposed to badness or evil. Again, pretty clearly negative. Then we reach gentleness, meekness, humility. Slightly unexpected, especially at the time. There's a book called After Virtue by a guy called Alistair MacIntyre, and he makes the remark in that humility could appear in no Greek list of the virtues. It just wasn't seen as a good thing to the Greek culture of the time. Something on the lines, if you didn't stand up for yourself, who would? And I think in many ways, our contemporary culture has elements of the same thing. Thinking about people writing CVs and putting yourself out there, it's kind of not very humble. And the negatives of gentleness, meekness and humility can include some good things like possibly firmness or fearlessness. So what do we make of this word in our list? Well, one of the things I was thinking about with this passage and thinking about this dichotomy between the kind of the good and the bad and the plus and the minus, the opposite of goodness and goodness and love, and then the opposite of gentleness and humility, was that terrible phrase and the hymn which it comes from, "Gentle Jesus, meek and mild." Who knows that hymn? Anyone? Yeah? I think it's terrible. As G.K. Chesterton puts it in The Everlasting Man, he says there's nothing meek and mild about Jesus. Yeah, I can't find the quote now. Maybe the bookmark's moved. Well, he says, there's nothing meek and mild in about Jesus. If you look at how he lived and worked, he said things such as to the man who had the unclean spirit, "Hold thy peace and come out of him," which he said is a very much more the tone of voice of a business-like lion tamer or a strong-minded doctor dealing with a homicidal maniac. Not mild. And part of the thing in our language is that mild and meek put together like that basically mean inoffensive, not causing any trouble. But that wasn't Jesus. He caused so much trouble. It wasn't much the same in the early church either. They got into all sorts of trouble. They kept kind of rocking the boat. Perhaps a better song to pick for this word would be from the Graham Kendrick song, "Meekness and Majesty," which again, I think some of you have probably sung. Meekness and majesty, manhood and deity in perfect harmony, the man who was God. Jesus was showing gentleness when he did things like washing the feet of the disciples in the upper room at the Last Supper. But it wasn't inconspicuous. It would have been shocking to the disciples. Their leader was doing something that was reserved for the lowest servant. It would have been a moment they would never have forgotten. And I don't think mild is an appropriate word for Jesus at all. Now, we're coming up to Christmas. Unfortunately, mild rhymes quite well with child, as you may have noticed in Christmas carols. So, a little hint. What I do is, whenever there's a Christmas carol and Jesus is described as mild with an M, I sing wild with a W, which which I think is much more theologically justified. He's not a tame lion, as C.S. Lewis famously wrote about Aslan. So I think, when we think of gentleness, strong gentleness, if it's not an oxymoron, it's being gentle in the way that the Amazon River is gentle when you look at it. It's just water moving. But if you try stopping it, you're going to lose. And gentleness in that sense. And we see some of that in the advice in 1 Peter, where 1 Peter 3, he writes, "Always be prepared to give an answer to anyone who asks you to give the reason for the hope that is in you. But do this with gentleness and respect, keeping a clear conscience, so that those who speak maliciously against you and your good behaviour in Christ may be ashamed of their slander." So that's our kind of calling to show gentleness, is when we are put on the spot. How do we respond? Do we respond in a kind of confrontational way, or do we respond with gentleness and respect? We don't have anything to prove. We know that we are accepted by God himself. And as we had in the Thessalonians reading, you know, they weren't looking for approval from men. They knew who they wanted approval from, and it wasn't from men, it was from God. And the same with us. And as we look at this aspect of the fruit of the Spirit, some of us, though, may need to ask ourselves whether we're displaying gentleness or just being weak. In this passage, they give a reason for the hope when they're asked. They don't just shrug and say nothing. Others of us may need to reflect on whether we're being too quick to reply, too quick to challenge, and perhaps put people's backs up. As Proverbs 5 puts it, a gentle answer turns away wrath, but a harsh word stirs up anger. I end with a story I've always liked from this book called Wisdom of the Desert, which is a collection of writings from some of the desert fathers back in the sort of 3rd and 4th century, who were this slightly wild and eccentric bunch of people who didn't like the way the church was going and it was becoming too tied up, they thought, with kind of contemporary society. And they went off and became hermits in the desert and formed communities. And lots of people flocked to them to hear what they had to say. But like a lot of people who live in community, they're quite down to earth. But they're also, occasionally, things happen that are very unexpected. And you realise that the drum that they were marching to is sometimes different from the one that we are. So the story is told that Abbot Abernastius had a book written on very fine parchment, which was worth about 18 pence, which is about 18 days' labour, and had in it both the Old and the New Testaments in full. One day, a certain brother came to visit him, and seeing the book, made off with it. So that day, when the abbot went to read his book, he found it was gone, and he realised that the brother had taken it. But he did not send after the brother to inquire for fear that the brother might add perjury to theft. Well, the brother went down to the nearby city in order to sell the book, and the price he asked was 16 pence. The buyer said, "Give me the book that I may find out whether it's really worth that much money." He took the book to the Holy Father and said, "Father, take a look at this book, please, and tell me whether you think I ought to buy it for 16 pence. Is it worth that much?" The abbot replied, said, "Yes, it is a fine book. It is worth that much." So the buyer went back to the brother and said, "Here's your money. I showed the book to the abbot, and he said it's a fine book and is worth at least 16 pence. But the brother said, "Is that all he said? Did he make any other remarks?" "No," said the buyer. "He did not say another word." "Well," said the brother, "I've changed my mind. I don't want to sell the book after all." Then he rushed back to the abbot and begged him with tears to take back his book. But the abbot would not accept it, saying, "Go in peace, brother. I make you a present of it." But the brother said, "If you do not take it back, I shall never have any peace." And after that, the brother dwelt with the abbot for the rest of his life. And I've always liked that as a very, very creative way of dealing with a rather horrible story, actually, of some brother coming and stealing your prize book. And the abbot being so solicitous for the brother and not wanting to inquire because he feared lest the brother would add lying to theft. That is the sort of attitude that I think demonstrates the sort of gentleness that we are called to and that the Holy Spirit can work in us. So I pray, Father, that you help each of us show your fruit of gentleness in our lives as we walk in the footsteps of your Son. Amen.